The Nightingale. You know, of course, that in China, the emperor is Chinese, and his subjects are Chinese, too. The story I'm going to tell you happened many years ago, but that's just why you'd better hear it now, before it's forgotten. The emperor's palace was the finest palace in the world, made entirely of delicate porcelain. It was all so precious and fragile that you had to be tremendously careful how you touched anything. The garden was full of the rarest flowers, and the loveliest of these had little silver bells tied to them, which tinkled so that nobody should go by without noticing them. Yes, everything in the emperor's garden was most carefully thought out, and it stretched so far that even the gardener had no idea where it ended. If you kept on walking, you found yourself in a glorious wood with tall trees and deep lakes. The wood went right down to the sea, which was blue and deep. Big ships could sail right in under the branches of the trees. Here lived a nightingale that sang so beautifully that even the poor fisherman, who had so much else to do, would stop and listen when he was taking his nets in at night and suddenly heard the nightingale. "My word, that's lovely," he said. But then he had to get on with his work and forgot about the bird. Yet when she sang again the following night and the fisherman was out there with his nets, "My word," he repeated, "that is lovely." From every country in the world, travelers came and marveled at the emperor's great city, his palace and his garden. But as soon as they heard the nightingale, everyone said the same. "Oh, but that's the best of all." And when they got home from their travels, they had many tales to tell, and clever people wrote books about the city and the palace and the garden. Yet they never forgot the nightingale. She was given the place of honor. And the poets wrote the most lovely poems, all about the nightingale in the wood there beside the deep sea. These books went all over the world, and so, of course, in time, some of them reached the emperor. There he sat in his golden chair, reading and reading. And now and then he nodded his head, for he was pleased to come across such splendid descriptions of the city and the palace and the garden. "But the nightingale is really the best of all," said the book he was reading. "What's this?" thought the emperor. "The nightingale? Why, I've never heard of her. Is there such a bird in my empire? And what's more, in my own garden? Nobody's ever told me that. One has to read about it in a book." And with that, he summoned his gentleman in waiting, who was so grand that when anyone of lower rank than himself ventured to speak to him or to ask a question, he only answered, "Pshh." And that means nothing at all. "It says here that we have a most remarkable bird called a nightingale," said the emperor. "They declare that there's nothing like her in all my empire. Why have I never been told of this before?" "It's the first I've ever heard of her," said the gentleman in waiting. "She's never been presented at court." "I command her to be brought here this evening to sing to me," said the emperor. "The whole world knows what I possess, and I know nothing." "It's the first I've ever heard of her," repeated the gentleman in waiting. "I shall look for her, and I shall find her."
"Find her? But where?"
The gentleman in waiting ran upstairs and downstairs, through rooms and passages, but none of the people he met had ever heard of the nightingale. So the gentleman in waiting hurried once more to the emperor and said it was obviously a story invented by those who write books. "Your Majesty mustn't believe everything you read. Most of it's just made up, what they call the black art." "But the book I read it in," said the emperor, "was sent me by the high and mighty emperor of Japan, so it can't be untrue. I will hear the nightingale. She's to come and sing tonight under my royal patronage, and if she fails to appear, then every courtier shall be punched in the stomach directly after supper." "Tsingpi," said the gentleman in waiting, and ran up and down the stairs all over again through all the rooms and passages. Half the court ran with him, for they didn't a bit like the idea of being punched in the stomach. They kept asking after this extraordinary nightingale that everybody knew about except the people at court. At last, they came across a poor little girl in the kitchen who said, "Oh, golly, the nightingale? Oh, I know her well. My, how she can sing. Every evening I'm allowed to take home a few scraps from the table for my poor sick mother who lives down by the shore. And on my way back, I often take a rest in the wood, and then I hear the nightingale singing. Oh, It brings tears to my eyes, just as if my mother were kissing me. Little kitchen maid, said the gentleman in waiting, you shall have a regular situation in the kitchen and be allowed to watch the emperor eating his dinner, if you'll only take us to the nightingale. You see, she's to give a command performance this evening before the emperor. So then they all set out for the wood where the nightingale used to sing. Half the court joined in the quest. As they were going along, a cow began to moo. Ah, there she is, said the courtiers. What remarkable strength in such a small creature. Yes, it's certainly not the first time we've heard her. No, but that's a cow mooing, said the little kitchen maid. We've still quite a long way to go. Then some frogs started croaking in the pond. Delightful, said the emperor's chaplain. Now I can hear her, just like little church bells. No, those are frogs, said the little kitchen maid. But I expect we shall hear her soon now. And then the nightingale began to sing. There she is, cried the little girl. Listen, listen. There she is. There she is, up there. And she pointed to a little grey bird up in the branches. Is it possible, said the gentleman in waiting. Why, I never pictured her like that. Oh, how ordinary she looks. I expect she's off colour through having so many distinguished visitors. Little nightingale, called out the small kitchen maid quite boldly. Our gracious emperor would like you to sing to him. With the greatest of pleasure, said the nightingale, and at once began to sing most deliciously. Just like glass bells, observed the gentleman in waiting. Look at the way her little throat keeps working. I can't make out why we've never heard her before. She'll make quite a hit at court. Shall I sing once more to the emperor? Asked the nightingale, for she thought the emperor was there. My excellent little nightingale, replied the gentleman in waiting, it is my very pleasant duty to summon you to a concert this evening at the palace, where you will enchant his imperial majesty with your delightful singing. Well, it sounds best in the open, said the nightingale. Still, she went along readily enough on hearing it was the emperor's wish. At the palace, everything had been polished up, until the china walls and floor glittered in the light of thousands and thousands of gold lamps. The loveliest flowers, hung ready for tinkling, were arranged in the corridors, and there was such a draught from the scurrying to and fro that their bells were all set ringing, and you couldn't hear a word that was spoken. In the middle of the great hall in which the emperor sat was a golden perch for the nightingale. The entire court was present, and the little kitchen maid was allowed to stand behind the door, as she now ranked as a regular palace kitchen maid. Everyone was dressed in their finest clothes, and they all looked at the little grey bird as the emperor nodded to her to begin. And the nightingale sang so beautifully that tears came into the emperor's eyes and trickled right down his cheeks. And then the nightingale's singing became even lovelier. It went straight to his heart. And the emperor was so pleased that he said the nightingale should have his gold slipper to wear round her neck. But the nightingale said, no, thank you. She had been rewarded enough already. I have seen tears in the emperor's eyes. That's my richest reward. There's a strange power in an emperor's tears. Heaven knows, they are reward enough. And then the nightingale let them hear her lovely voice again. Who ever saw such airs and graces? Said the ladies around, and they went and filled their mouths with water so that they could gurgle when anyone spoke to them. Yes, they thought they could be nightingales too. Even the lackeys and ladies' maids expressed their approval, and that's saying a good deal, for they're the most difficult of all to satisfy. There's no doubt whatever, the nightingale made a great hit. She was now to remain at court and have her own cage, with leave to go out for 2 walks in the daytime and 1 at night. She was given 12 attendants who each held on tightly to a silk ribbon fastened round her leg. Well, there was absolutely no fun in a walk like that. The whole city was talking of this remarkable bird, and when 2 people met, one of them merely said, night, and the other said, gale. And after that, they sighed and quite understood each other. What's more, 11 grocer's children were named after her, but not one of them had a note in its head. One day, A large parcel arrived for the Emperor with the word Nightingale written on the outside.
I expect this is a new book about our famous bird, said the Emperor.
But it wasn't a book at all. It was a little gadget lying in a box. An artificial nightingale that was supposed to look like the live one, but was covered all over with diamonds, rubies, and sapphires. You only had to wind it up, and it would sing one of the songs that the real nightingale sang. And all the while, its tail went up and down, glittering with silver and gold. Round its neck was a little ribbon, on which was written, "The Emperor of Japan's nightingale is poor beside the Emperor of China's."
How delightful, they all said.
And the one who brought the artificial bird was at once given the title of Chief Imperial Nightingale Bringer.
Now they must both sing at once,
suggested somebody.
What a duet that will be.
So the two birds had to sing together. But it wasn't a success, because the real nightingale sang in her own way, whereas the artificial bird went by clockwork.
Well, it can't be blamed for that, said the master of the Emperor's music. It keeps perfect time and follows my own methods exactly.
After that, the artificial bird had to sing by itself. It was just as popular as the real one, and of course it was also much prettier to look at, glittering there like a cluster of brooches and bracelets. Over and over again it sang its one and only song, 33 times without tiring, and the listeners would have liked to hear it all once more, but the Emperor thought that now it was time for the real nightingale to do some singing. But wherever was she? No one had noticed her fly out of the open window, away into her own green woods.
Bless my soul! What's the meaning of this? Said the Emperor.
And all the courtiers were highly indignant and said what an ungrateful creature the nightingale was.
Still, we've got the best one, they added.
And the artificial bird was obliged to sing once more. That was the 34th time they were hearing the same song, but they didn't quite know it even yet, for it was very difficult. And the master of music gave the bird extraordinary praise. In fact, he declared that it was better than the real nightingale, not merely because of its outward appearance and all the wonderful diamonds, but also for the works inside. Everyone said that they quite agreed, and the master of music got permission to show the bird to the public on the following Sunday.
They must also hear it sing, said the Emperor.
And hear it they did. They were as delighted as if they'd drunk themselves merry on tea. And that's so like the Chinese. But the poor fisherman who had heard the real nightingale said,
It doesn't sound so bad. It's quite like the bird. Yet there's something kind of missing.
The real nightingale was sent into exile, banished from land and realm. The artificial bird had its place on a silk cushion close to the Emperor's bed. All the presents it had been given, gold and precious stones, lay round about, and it was promoted to be Chief Imperial Bedside Minstrel of the First Class on the left. For the Emperor considered the side on which the heart lies to be the most distinguished, and even an emperor has his heart on the left. The master of music wrote a book in 25 volumes about the mechanical bird. It was very long and learned, full of the most difficult Chinese words, and everyone pretended they had read it and understood it, or else, of course, they would have been thought stupid and got punched in the stomach. Well, this went on for a whole year, until the emperor, his court, and all the other Chinese knew by heart every little gurgle in the throat of the artificial songbird. And for that very reason, they came to like it all the better. They could join in the singing themselves, and they did. And the street boys sang, chee, 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 clook, clook, clook. And the emperor sang it too. It really was tremendous fun. But one evening, just as the artificial bird was in full song, and the emperor lay listening in bed, something went snap inside the bird, and then there was a purr. The wheels all went whizzing round, and the music stopped. The emperor jumped quickly out of bed and sent for the doctor, but what could he do? Then they brought along the watchmaker, and after a great deal of talk and poking about, he got the bird to work after a fashion. But he said that it mustn't be used too often, as the bearings were almost worn out, and it was impossible to get fresh parts that would fit in properly with the music. This was a sad disappointment. Only once a year was the artificial bird allowed to sing, and even that was something of a strain.
But on these occasions, the master of music made a little speech full of difficult words, saying that the bird was just as good as ever. And so, of course, it was just as good as ever. 5 years had now gone by, and presently the whole country was filled with sorrow, for really, in their hearts, they were all fond of their emperor. But now he was ill and not likely to live, it was said. A new emperor had already been chosen, and people stood out in the street and asked the gentleman in waiting how their emperor was. "Pooh," he replied, and shook his head. Cold and pale lay the emperor in his magnificent great bed. The whole court believed him to be dead, and each of them hastened to pay their respects to the new emperor. The valets ran out to gossip about it, and the palace housemaids had a large tea party. Everywhere in all the rooms and corridors, heavy cloth had been laid down in order to deaden the sound of footsteps. The whole palace was as still could be. But the emperor wasn't dead yet. Stiff and pale, he lay in the magnificent bed with its long velvet curtains and heavy gold tassels. Through an open window high up on the wall, the moon was shining down on the emperor and the artificial bird. The poor emperor could scarcely breathe. It was just as if something was sitting on his chest. He opened his eyes, and then he saw that it was death that sat on his chest and had put on his gold crown and was holding the emperor's gold sword in one hand and his splendid banner in the other. All around the bed, from the folds in the great velvet curtains, strange faces were peering, some of them hideous, others wonderfully kind and gentle. These were the emperor's good and evil deeds, gazing down on him now that death was sitting on his heart. "Do you remember that?" they whispered, one after the other. "Do you remember that? Do you remember that?" And they told him so much that the sweat stood out on his forehead. "I never realized that," said the emperor. "Music, music, sound the great Chinese drum," he cried, "to save me from hearing what they say." But still they went on, and death kept nodding like a Chinese at every word they whispered. "Music, music," shrieked the emperor. "You wonderful little golden bird, sing, I implore you, sing. I've given you gold and precious stones. I've hung my own gold slipper around your neck. Sing. I implore you. Sing." But the bird was silent. There was no one to wind it up, and it couldn't sing without that. But death went on staring at the emperor with his great hollow eyes, and everything was so still, so terribly still. All at once, close to the window, came a burst of most beautiful singing. It was the little live nightingale, perched in a tree outside. She had heard of her emperor's distress and had therefore come to sing him consolation and hope. And as she sang, the shapes grew fainter and fainter. The blood in the emperor's weak limbs ran faster and faster. And death himself listened and said, "Go on, little nightingale, go on." "Yes, if you'll give me the fine gold sword, if you'll give me the splendid banner, if you'll give me the emperor's crown." And death gave up each treasure for a song. And still the nightingale went on singing. She sang of the quiet churchyard where the white roses bloom, where the elder tree smells so sweet, and where the fresh grass is watered with the tears of those who are left behind. Then death began to long for his garden and floated like a cold white mist out of the window. Thank you, said the emperor. You heavenly little bird, now I know who you are. I banished you from land and realm, and yet you have sung those evil visions away from my bed. You have lifted death from my heart. How can I ever repay you?" "You have done already," said the nightingale. "The first time I sang, I brought tears to your eyes. I shall never forget that. Those are the jewels that rejoice a singer's heart. But
Sleep now. Sleep. Get well and strong again. I will sing to you. And the nightingale sang, and the emperor fell into a sweet sleep. Such a peaceful, refreshing sleep. When he awoke, restored once more to health, the sun was shining in through the windows. None of his servants had come back yet, for they thought he was dead. But the nightingale was still singing outside. You must never leave me again, said the emperor. You shall only sing when you want to, and the artificial bird, I shall break it into a thousand pieces. No, don't do that, said the nightingale. It's done what it could. Don't part with it yet. I can't make my home in the palace, but let me come when I feel that I want to. Then I'll sit of an evening on this branch by the window, and my singing can make you both gay and thoughtful. I shall sing of those that are happy and of those that suffer. I shall sing of the good and the evil that are here lurking about you. Your little songbird must fly round to distant homes, to the poor fisherman and the humble peasant, to those who are far from you and your court. I love your heart better than your crown. And yet, there's a breath of something holy about the crown. I shall come. I shall sing to you. Yet there's one thing you must promise me. Whatever you ask, answered the emperor, standing there in the imperial robes that he had put on himself and holding the heavy gold sword to his heart. Only one thing I ask of you. Let no one know that you have a little bird who tells you everything. That will be best. And then the nightingale flew away. The servants came in to look after their dead emperor. Yes, there they stood. And the emperor said, Good morning,